So, welcome to the next edition of the Wear a Business podcast. With me today, I have Kerry Bodine from Forrester. Hi, Kerry.
Hello, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So, Kerry, tell us a little bit about you and a bit about Forrester and the work that you do.
Sure. So I'm a vice president and principal analyst on the customer experience research team at Forrester, and I lead our research into customer experience design. I have a design background myself. I started designing websites back in 1995, and I've worked as a design practitioner and leader in a bunch of different business contexts. And so I bring that background to my particular research, and I help our clients to define and learn new ways to create and design better experiences for their customers.
Fantastic.
The team at Forrester looks more broadly at customer experience beyond just design, of course. And essentially, we try to help our clients create the business case for customer experience, inspire them to deliver great customer experiences, and then also provide them with the practical tools that they need to actually make it happen within their organizations.
That's fantastic. Now, also, you're on the cusp of publishing a new book called Outside In, The Power of Putting Customers at the Center of Your Business. And that's coming out at the end of August. So tell us a bit about that. Must be exciting. Tell us a bit about the book.
It's incredibly exciting. So it comes out on August 28th. The book is really a culmination of 14 years of research into customer experience that we've been doing at Forrester. My co-author, Harley Manning, and I, we've drawn from the research really of our entire team to put together what we think is a pretty unique book about customer experience in the business world. It's unique because we've got specific frameworks for helping readers understand all the dynamics that go into the customer experience, into delivering it, and then also for how they actually need to change their organizations and make it work. And I'm happy to tell you about a couple of those frameworks if you'd like to hear about them.
Yeah, no, that'd be fantastic. What was really interesting, one is I've read some of your stuff before and I really like that, so I don't want to turn into a complete fanboy, but I'm just saying that some of the stuff that you do is great. But tell me about some of the research, because I mean, I think that's what's quite interesting. I mean, there's one framework that you talked about where you've talked about we're moving into this age of the customer, and that's the sort of our new era, that's sort of the new revolution, as it were. What's driving that, do you think?
It's really just a series of macroeconomic changes and looking at and technology changes as well. So if you look at kind of how our economy has evolved over the past 100 years or so, we were first in the age of manufacturing. So this is about 1900 and 1960. And in this time, if you owned a factory, you essentially owned a market. And then we moved from about 1960 to 1990. Into the age of distribution. And during this time, if you owned the distribution channels, you essentially owned the market. And then, of course, we moved into the information age from about 1990 to about 2010. And some people still believe that we're in the information age. At Forrester, we believe that we are firmly now into the age of the customer, again, starting a couple years ago. And you know, information technology is still critical. Distribution channels, manufacturing, these things are not going away, but they're no longer a source of competitive advantage. They're really table stakes. All of these traditional sources of business advantage have been commoditized. And then you add into that all of the technology that has truly put it shifted the power into the hands of consumers, and so consumers now have as much information about a company's products and services and pricing and competitors as sometimes people internally in the company do, and they also have their own access to manufacturing and distribution channels and information. So it's really the culmination of all of these different market and technology forces that are really bringing customer experience to the forefront. And truly, you know, when customers have so much power, so much information, it's really only the value that comes out through customer experience that's going to be the way, really the best, and we would even argue the only way that companies are going to be able to create true differentiation and be able to sustain that for several decades to come.
And so you mentioned earlier about some of the frameworks that you've developed to help companies sort of think through, I guess, where they are versus their competitors and what they need to, you know, and how they can, I guess, measure themselves in terms of where they are on the journey to becoming customer centric. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of those frameworks?
Yeah, sure. Well, there's really two big frameworks in the book. The first is called the Customer Experience Ecosystem, and this is a framework that we developed last year to help our clients, again, really understand all of those complex underlying drivers of the problems that their customers experience. So what we were finding was that, you know, a company would say, okay, well, we've got this customer experience problem, and they would try and essentially just put a Band-Aid right on that particular touch point or problem, where really there might be some very systemic problem within the organization that might be actually quite far away from the customer problem itself that was causing it. So, for example, a problem with a decision made by legal or finance, or maybe it was a human resources compensation issue that was driving the wrong behaviors on the part of employees. And so this customer experience ecosystem framework is designed to really help our clients and the readers of the book understand and map out for themselves all of those complex interdependencies within their organization.
Okay.
And then the second framework that we've got is Forrester's Customer Experience Maturity Model. And this is another framework that we developed last year. And it lays out six disciplines that companies need to truly master in order to reap the full potential of customer experience. And so these are representative of changes that have to take place across the entire organization. And the six disciplines are customer experience strategy. So they've got to create a vision or you know, a guide for people, for all the employees as they work to create a better customer experience. They have to tell them where they're trying to go. Customer understanding, so getting customer insights. Design, actually designing the experience. And then in terms of customer experience management, we've got measurement, governance, and culture, developing a customer-centric culture.
Excellent. I mean, it seems to me that as well that this is, I mean, it's turning a lot of the, if you like, the production or the enterprise models that are currently established for some of the, not necessarily just big businesses, but also smaller businesses. It's almost like some of them are getting turned on their heads, as it were. And it's producing some really big challenges for the ways that many businesses have done business. So where, as a researcher, as an analyst, as an advisor, where would you be advising those CEOs or those directors or those VPs or chairmen of those companies? Where should they start? If you like, look at kind of where they are on the journey and sort of get a measure of where they're going. Is it, do they start with the frameworks, or is it something a bit more fundamental than that?
Well, there's a couple of different starting places, and really any change is, and any improvement is going to be a good one. So, you know, there's no single right or wrong way to do this, but you know, we've developed these two frameworks because they're great for companies that are just starting out and are trying to figure out where to go, and they're also great for companies to guide them, you know, as they go further and further into the journey. So the ecosystem framework, for example, is a way for companies to identify, hey, here are some of the big problems within our organization, and help them prioritize those issues so that they can start to make some changes. So just by doing the ecosystem mapping exercise that we describe in the book, companies can start to identify some of the things they need to change. If they wanted to take a different approach, I would say that they could do the look at the maturity model and do a self-assessment on how well or really to what degree their company has adopted each of the practices that are described in the maturity model. So there's six disciplines, and then there's 40 practices that span those six disciplines. And so it's the maturity model is and the evaluation or self-assessment that we've developed for that is a way for companies to figure out, okay, here's where our strengths are today, here are the things that we're already doing, and here are the areas that we really haven't done anything at all. And it helps them to create a roadmap for how they can start to really make systemic change within the organization.
That's fantastic. So in a sense, that almost like doing a self-assessment is almost like a bit like doing it's like having the maturity models. It's like there's a six areas, but there's a 40 different sort of behaviors or steps that you're talking about. It's like almost doing a bit of a diagnostic. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. It's helping. It gives the people who are administering it, whoever that is within the organization, it gives them a really good picture of what the current behaviors are. And it helps them see too if maybe the behaviors in one part of the organization are different than the behaviors in another part of the organization. And that's typically what we find. It's not as though today customer experience practices are being adopted uniformly across large companies. They're having little pockets of people here and there who are starting to wake up to the importance of this and are starting to do different activities and make different types of decisions. But it's often lumpy when you look at the overall picture.
Sure, and I think the also the other thing that seems to me that it's working because your work is research based and it's also comparative. I guess what you're doing is you could also kind of look at it and combine it with some of the data that you've got to see where companies are versus their peers as well. But on another area, I guess it also is going to help you address this in the book around what's the ROI of some of these efforts, because that's one of the big things that, with the economy being so tight and everything so competitive, many senior executives want to know what is the ROI in there. And you've got some really interesting data about customer experience leaders and how they've performed versus their peers over the last 5, 10, 15 years. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, sure thing. So the way that this analysis works is that we have at Forrester something that we publish every year called the Customer Experience Index. And it's essentially a ranking of large firms. There's over 150 firms in the index. And it is a ranking by consumers. We put the survey out. Last year it was over 7,000 consumers in the U.S. And we asked them which of these large companies they'd worked with in the last 90 days. And of the companies they worked with, we asked them, how well did these companies meet your needs? How easy was it to do business with each of these companies? And then how enjoyable was it to do business with each of these companies? And then from those questions, what we do is we calculate each firm's customer experience index score. And I'm going to spare you the math on how we actually do that. But essentially, the score reflects how consumers perceive their customer experience with these large firms. And just to give you some flavor on how this shakes out, in 2012, the customer experience index leaders included companies like USAA, a bank here in the U.S., which is really well known for delivering a great customer experience, Kohl's, which is a retailer, Amazon, and Office Depot, another retailer. And then the laggards included Medicaid, which is one of our government-run healthcare programs, and then a lot of telecom companies, so Charter Communications, Frontier Corporation, so telecom companies, internet, TV service providers. And the leaders and the laggards are different every year. Obviously the rankings change year by year. And so again, we've been doing this since 2007, and there's a guy, John Picholt, from Watermark Consulting, and what he decided to do was compare two stock portfolios, one with the customer experience index leaders and then the other with the customer experience index laggards. And so for 5 years in a row, he compared the total return of the top 10 publicly traded firms in the customer experience index to the total return of the bottom 10 publicly traded firms in the index. So essentially what he did was, say he took $10,000 and invested them at the beginning of the year, at the beginning of 2007 with the leaders from that year, and then sold all the stock at the end of the year. And then in 2008, he invested again with the 2008 leaders and leaders and laggards, and so on for each year. So he did that for 5 years. And over that 5-year period, the S&P 500 was essentially flat. And then the customer experience leaders, that portfolio had a cumulative return of 22.5%, and the laggards declined negative 46.3%.
So those are quite some
So,
stark results.
Yes, they are indeed, and it's just so interesting to show that it makes intuitive sense that customers are going to reward the companies for delivering a great customer experience, but it's even more interesting to see that markets and investors are going to reward companies for delivering a great customer experience as well.
Absolutely, and one of the things that I really like to write about in the blog, and I'm really interested in, is the way that companies build better relationships. Not with just with customers that are outside of their business, but also with the people inside of their business, because the idea being if you have engaged employees, then you're more likely to have engaged customers. Have you been able to explore anything around sort of the relationship between engaged employees and customer engagement in your work, or is that sort of outside the scope of the book?
Well, I think that the culture discipline really speaks to that as well. Building it's one of the six disciplines in our maturity model, and it really speaks to the type of just DNA that companies need to build in order to make sure that their customer experience initiatives aren't just kind of these one-off, one and done type of projects. And so I think employee engagement is really encapsulated into that. So when we look at the culture discipline, there's really three main buckets of things. So first thing, it involves hiring.
Uh-huh.
So are you hiring the right people in the first place? So, are you hiring people who want to engage with customers and who believe in the power of customer experience? There's a case study in the book about the retailer Office Depot, and we talked to Kevin Peters, who is the president for North American Retail, and he admits that over the years, their hiring profile had changed, and they had started to hire people to work in the stores who were very task-oriented, but who weren't necessarily comfortable talking with customers. And so changing that hiring profile was one of the things that they did to turn around the customer experience in their stores. So after you look at, okay, who are you bringing into the organization in the first place, the next thing has to do with socialization. And so this is really about how you get the customer experience message out into your organization. So this involves things like new hire training, ongoing training for existing employees, rituals, storytelling, those types of activities, things that help people understand why it's important to do this whole customer experience thing.
Okay.
And then the third bucket of practices in the culture discipline have to do with rewards, both informal rewards, things like, a restaurant gift certificate, or just a simple email that's saying, hey, so-and-so did a great job helping a customer the other day.
Okay.
Informal rewards like that. And then formal rewards that actively tie people's bonus or perhaps their promotions to their track record in delivering a great customer experience. So those are the types of things that we've been looking at Forrester surrounding employee engagement.
Excellent. It's fascinating. And what I'm really interested sort of in, and then this, I think this is really good, is there's a lot of people that talk about customer engagement and building a more customer-centric business and building something which is really customer-focused. But what I'm really fascinated with is that you've actually, it's very research sort of led. And that's very exciting. So I'll look forward to seeing how the book does. But in the interest of time, and I know you're a little bit pressed, I always finish my interviews with one question. And that question is, what would you like to shamelessly plug?
Oh, well, of course. I'd love to shamelessly plug our book, Outside In. We've actually got a website where you can go and find out a lot of information about the book. It's outsidein.forrester.com. And we've got author videos up there and images from the book and ideas for how people who are reading the book can take the ideas that we've described in there further within their own organizations.
That's Kerry, that's fantastic. I'll make sure I get all that linked up and everything so we can point everybody to the right locations. And thank you so much for your time today. That's been brilliant.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much.